Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Monday, the 18th of January. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, with just 1 month to go before the elections in Uganda, voters tell us about their hopes and expectations.
We need to revamp the healthcare system. There's too much that is lacking.
As a young person who aspires to be someone in life, I would like my favorite presidential candidate to work on the issue of unemployment.
And Burkina Faso is mourning the deaths of 29 people killed in a militant attack on a restaurant and hotel.
This kind of attack was not known in Ouagadougou until Friday evening.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
In exactly a month's time, on February the 18th, the people of Uganda will be choosing a new leader in a presidential election. On Friday, Uganda held its first ever US-style televised presidential debate, which all eight candidates were invited to attend. One candidate was conspicuous by his absence, the current president, Yoweri Museveni. From Kampala, Alex Jitter reports.
One after one, the seven contestants strode into the debate venue, ready to sell their arguments to the Ugandan electorate.
The first candidate to get on stage, ladies and gentlemen, is Professor Venantius Baryamureeba.
In their opening statements, each outlined why they are the best candidate for the country's top position. It was a moment Ugandans had yearned for a long time. The candidates delved into matters of the economy, governance, corruption, social services, and gender equality. All candidates addressed the sorry state of Uganda's health care system as the main issue. It was a departure from the personal attacks that most candidates used on their campaign trail. Amama Mbabazi, Museveni's former prime minister until September 2014, was tasked to explain why he did not carry out what he is now promising while he was still in government.
You have free debate within cabinet. Whatever the majority decides is actually what is done. I am absolutely proud of what I did, both in giving ideas which were not accepted and giving ideas that were accepted. So I am perfectly happy with it.
Kizza Besigye, a three-time contender, says the country missed hearing Museveni justifying his stay in power for three decades.
I think we missed more than him, because we would have wanted him to indeed respond to many important questions that relate to the record of his 30-year leadership. So I think the country missed, ourselves who are contestants missed. I doubt that he missed much himself.
Many Ugandans were happy with the initiative, but felt disappointed by Museveni's absence.
It has clearly shown the world that the president does not respect the will of the people, because he should be here anyway.
Surely most of the questions would have gone to him, given the fact that he has ruled this country for 30 years. It would have given us an opportunity to interrogate quite a number of issues involving him. So he has denied us that opportunity.
Justice James Ogola, the chairperson of the Elders Forum, believes they achieved their objective.
A seed that has been planted towards the long journey to democracy. From now on, our issues, our campaigns, our electioneering should be done on the basis of debates, on the basis of issues, of ideas, rather than what we've been doing up to now.
There are plans to have another debate on February 10th. 8 days before the election.
Alex Jitter, critics of President Yoweri Museveni say Uganda is suffering from high unemployment, poor healthcare infrastructure, underperforming schools and corruption. Both Besigye and Mbabazi have accused Museveni's government of using the security agencies to intimidate their supporters. So what are Ugandans expecting from this elections? Alex Jitter has been sampling the mood in the capital, Kampala.
The last 30 years, which have been largely peaceful, the level of social service delivery is not up to my expectations. Look at the road network. Fine, they will tell you they have made some roads, but I think a lot should have been done by this time. Hospitals and other medical facilities, health facilities, a lot is still lacking. When it comes to schools, the standard of education is continuing to go down. I'm looking at someone who can do better or more or add on to what has been done so far.
We need to revamp the healthcare system. There's too much that is lacking. Go to Mlago Hospital. You'll cry. It is in a sorry state. Not only Mlago Hospital, but most of all the referral hospitals. The healthcare system is rotten. We need to see that change.
As Godfrey Sally, a young person who aspires to be someone in life, I would like my favorite presidential candidate to work on the issue of unemployment. We know that over 70% of the Ugandan population are young people, and there are only over 100,000 jobs in the government. So most of the other jobs are supposed to be from the private sector, but there are no jobs for young people who are educated.
Me, as a woman, what I would like to see, first of all, is education. The education system in the country currently is just down. We see that everyone is complaining about the education sector. And secondly, about the health sector. Yes, the president has done much to ensure that the health sector is somewhere. But still, we can see there are challenges.
The road networks, more efforts should be done in terms of road construction.
Ugandans sharing their thoughts on next month's elections.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The prime ministers of Mali and Burkina Faso have agreed to work together to counter the threat of Islamist violence in West Africa, saying they will share intelligence and conduct joint security patrols. Their meeting on Sunday came 2 days after Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, was hit by a militant attack on a hotel and a restaurant. 29 people were killed, the majority of them foreign nationals. Our correspondent in Ouagadougou, Bram Postumus, has been giving Jane Ayeko more details.
We have a curfew in place which now begins at 23 hours. That's 1 hour before midnight and goes on until 6 in the morning and is very strictly enforced because apparently not all of the assailants, not all of the attackers have been caught. Apparently there is still at least one, perhaps two, reportedly are still at large. Other than that, the city is calm, people are going about their business, but I can even tell you that on the Saturday, immediately after the attack, the marriages that are usually planned for those Saturdays and are very extravagant affairs went on as planned.
What does this tell us then about not just the social fabric, but people's perception of these kind of attacks? I mean, if something like that in that magnitude happens and people still continue with their life as if nothing had gone wrong.
I think first thing to realize is that this country and its people have been through a lot over the past 15, 16 months. So they are used to quite a number of pretty important and quite violent things happening in their country. So in that sense, there hasn't been the element of surprise. What has been the element of surprise, obviously, is that this kind of attack was not known in Ouagadougou until Friday evening.
Now, Bram, you realize that this attack took place in a luxury hotel. If we recall, a couple of months ago, the attack that took place, in Central African Republic, was also in a luxury hotel. And we've seen such attacks also taking place in Eastern Africa, for instance, in Kenya. What does this tell us about the militia? Could it be a way of getting back at the Western world, considering these luxury hotels are mostly occupied by foreigners?
The point you're making is quite valid in the sense that, yes, this is indeed the kind of place where you will find a relatively large number of Westerners with money. However, we should not be making the mistake of saying that this is only because there are Westerners there, because that would negate the fact that a lot of ordinary common Burkinabe get caught up in this, and we tend to forget that.
So, Brian, tell me, what's the government's position so far in as far as minimizing future attacks?
There is quite clearly going to be an emphasis on national security. Pretty sure they're also working with French and American intelligence, which already has bases here in Ouagadougou. We know that French special forces and American military have been working with the Burkinabe in dislodging the terrorists from that hotel. And I'm pretty sure what we're going to see as well is a beefing up of border security.
Brian Postumus in Ouagadougou talking to Jane Ayeko. 55 years have passed since Congo's first freely elected Prime Minister, Patrice Lumumba, was assassinated by Belgian forces. He ruled what is now known as the Democratic Republic of Congo for just 4 months. The culprits have never been punished, and his death has far-reaching consequences. This report by Frederica Muller-Jung is read now by Eunice Wanjuru.
On June 30, 1960, Belgian Congo gained independence to become the Republic of Congo. During the official Independence Day celebrations, the new Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba publicly denounced Belgium for its brutal colonial methods. Lumumba wanted to free the country from its colonial shackles, to unite the ethnic groups and manage the country's natural resources locally. The Belgian king and foreign diplomats were shocked and dismayed by the young leader's political ambitions. This did not fit into the West's agenda. Belgium and the US saw their influence waning. Lumumba was put under arrest by the Republic's army chief, Joseph Désiré Mobutu. Ludo de Witte, a Belgian sociologist and author of a book on Lumumba, says he was loved by the people and his supporters wanted to liberate him. That would have been a disaster for Belgium and the US. To avoid this, they hatched a plan.
So they decided to have him killed on the day itself he arrived in Katanga, and he was executed by an execution squad which was organized by Belgian officers.
Lumumba was killed on January 17, 1961. In 2000, Belgium set a commission of inquiry to investigate his death. 2 years later, Belgium's Foreign Minister Louis Michel apologized to Lumumba's family and the Congolese people for his country's role in the assassination. But De Witte finds this apology wanting.
The Belgian Commission of Inquiry has concluded that Belgium had a moral responsibility into the assassination of Lumumba, which is something very vague. It goes halfway between denying what happened and coming out for the full truth.
To date, nobody has been punished for Lumumba's death. Belgium still has diplomatic ties with what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lumumba's demise paved the way for the rise of power of Mobutu, who as Mobutu Sese Seko ruled the country as a dictator for 3 decades. But British journalist Michaela Wrong says Lumumba's death was also keenly felt elsewhere.
I think what happened to Lumumba had reverberations well beyond Congo, across, you know, the whole of the continent, because everybody looked at his assassination and thought, that's what happens when you stand up to the West. This is how they mess with us.
Lumumba stood up to the US and Belgium and still has the reputation of what some call the Congolese Che Guevara. Wrong says he became a hero after his death, but has to wonder whether he would have achieved that status had he survived, given the magnitude of his vast country's problems.
Eunice Wanjuru with a report by Frederica Muller-Jung. And now, as always, on a Monday here on Africa Link, it's time now for another instalment in our radio drama series, Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome back. It's time for Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. This is the 4th episode called Crime of Passion. We're in the middle of a murder investigation led by Detective Allen. The young vet, Patrick, has been stabbed to death, and so far his widow, Lucy, is the main suspect. Some new evidence has just come to light. It seems Patrick was having an affair with someone called Betty. And on Patrick's computer, the police found a blackmail letter addressed to Mr. G. This is a notorious local poacher, and Alan's colleague, Carl, is looking for him. In today's episode, we start off at the police station, where the two officers are comparing notes.
Hey, Alan. Do you want some coffee?
No, thanks, Carl.
I've got something better to wake you up.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Believe it or not, Mr. G has come up in my investigation.
Mr. G? Really? How?
Apparently, someone was blackmailing him. We found a letter on the victim's computer. It mentions a video of Mr. G that reveals his true identity.
Wow. Alan, exciting. You have to tell me all about it.
Sure. First, though, I'm going to ask Lucy about it. She's still our prime suspect. I might have more news for you later. I'm heading to the interrogation room now.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Yeah. So, how are you today, Lucy?
How do you think, Alan? Uncomfortable. That's how I am. Uncomfortable and miserable.
Who is Mr. G?
Mr. G? No idea. Nobody knows who he is.
Well, somebody does. And it could have been Patrick. We found a letter on his computer addressed to Mr. G. A blackmail letter.
What are you talking about, Alan?
The blackmailer told Mr. G to leave a ransom near your house. Tell me, Lucy, were you or your husband blackmailing Mr. G?
No! I don't know anything about any blackmail.
What about Patrick? Could he have known who Mr. G is?
He never mentioned it.
But you knew Patrick was having an affair. That's why you threatened to kill him, isn't it?
Yes, but I already told you I didn't mean it.
Did you know who the other woman was?
No, I didn't. And Patrick wouldn't tell me.
And that made you so angry you took the knife.
I didn't kill him, Alan. I didn't kill him, okay? Will you listen to me?
Okay, all right. Calm down. Officer, take Lucy back to her cell. I'll talk to her again later.
Meanwhile, in downtown Bovu, wildlife photographer Musa and his girlfriend Betty are starting their day. Musa's just got back from a long working trip in the jungle, and now he wants to edit some of the material he shot in the last few weeks.
Betty? Betty?
Yes, Musa? What is it?
Did you see the hard drive I left by the computer last time I was home?
Damn, I forgot to put it back. Your hard what? Wait, let me turn off the water so I can hear you better.
My hard drive. The little black box. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. Why?
It had some important footage on it from my last trip. I left it on the desk by the computer. Where could it be?
I don't know. Are you sure you left it there?
Of course I'm sure, Betty. I always put my raw footage next to the computer for editing later. You didn't move it or anything?
Excuse me? Why would I touch your boring stuff?
I'm asking because there are only two of us living in this house.
Give me a break. Maybe you dropped it in the jungle. Don't blame me if you can't look after your things, Musa.
That drive has some very sensitive material on it. If you've put it somewhere, please give it back.
Police! Open up!
Instead of one suspect, Alan lives with two, Betty and Musa. His reason? Well, what if Musa found out about the affair between Patrick and his girlfriend and killed his rival? First though, Alan wants to know what Betty has to say about her relationship with Patrick.
So Betty, how did you know Patrick?
He was my friend.
Just a friend? Nothing else? When was the last time you saw him?
It was a long time ago. I don't remember.
No, Betty, that's not going to fly, I'm afraid. You're in very serious trouble here. You'd better start telling me what you know.
I don't know what you're talking about, Detective Alan. I haven't done anything and I don't know anything. I don't know why I'm here.
Where were you on the 15th at about 6 o'clock in the evening?
6 o'clock? Why are you asking this silly question?
Betty...
I was at home, sleeping.
Sleeping? Alone?
Hey, don't be so rude.
Were you alone or not?
I was with my boyfriend.
Oh. You mean your other boyfriend, Musa? I'll check that.
What are you talking about? There is no other boyfriend.
Did you and Patrick have an intimate relationship?
Me and Patrick, no.
But why are you still lying to me? We found a message on Patrick's phone, and it says, Betty, I don't think we should see each other anymore. I love my wife, and I want to stay with her. I'm sorry, Patrick. Now, tell me the truth. Did you kill Patrick because he left you?
I did not kill him. I didn't even know he was dead. Please, let me go.
Here's what I think happened. After he sent you the message, you went to see him, and he refused to listen to you, so you stabbed him.
I did not kill Patrick. I'm not a killer. You've got to believe me.
Did he ever speak to you about Mr. G?
No.
Okay, Betty. It seems you don't want to talk to me. You'll wish you did, though, when you're up against us in court. We'll take your fingerprints before we let you go. So, don't leave town, huh?
Yes, officer.
So, Betty's been set free. But for how long? Meanwhile, back in the jungle, the poachers are still going about their business.
Hold it. What is it? There's a leopard in that tree. Quiet. Oh, man, where?
Shh.
Ah. You killed it. Oh, man, why did you do that?
Shut up. He's not dead yet.
Oh!
Now he's dead.
But did you have to kill it?
Would you rather I let it maul you?
Oh, man. I feel so bad when we kill these animals.
Then why do you do it?
Because I need the money, of course. It's one thing to kill elephants. We can sell their tusks. But a leopard? What good is that?
You really are naive, aren't you? Take your knife and I'll show you how to skin it. We'll sell the hide to traditional healers. They think it can heal the spirit or some such nonsense. Besides, people like to wear leopard skin. It's a sign of wealth.
Huh? We can sell it?
No, we can eat it. Of course we can sell it, you dumbass. Hello? Yes, Mr. G. Yes? Yes, we found the elephants, but they took off. Yes. We are tracking them right now. What? I don't know. Yes? I'll see what we can do. Mr. G, I'm sorry. God damn it.
What is it? What did he want?
Mr. G received another threatening letter. I don't understand it.
And that's where we have to end for today. What will happen next time? Will Alan get any closer to unraveling the truth about Patrick's death? Until we meet again, you can find this and other episodes on our website at dw.com/crimefighters. You can also follow us on Facebook. Take care. Bye-bye.
And here on Africa Link, there'll be another chance to hear that instalment of Crime Fighters on Thursday. Our main stories. The Prime Ministers of Mali and Burkina Faso have agreed to work together to counter the threat of Islamist violence in West Africa, following Friday's attack in Ouagadougou in which 29 people were killed. And we've also been hearing what people in Uganda are hoping will change after the upcoming elections to be held in exactly 1 month's time. Please remember, we welcome your comments on this programme. You can send a text message to country code 49 160 957 595 10 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.